RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Start your engine!
For the next hour, the airwaves belong to you. Sit down, strap in, and let's head to WGR's Fast Track.
All right, take a nice big deep breath, buddy.
With your host.
Let's go out there and have a good day, all right, bud?
Dave Buchanan.
No fuel conservation now. Let's mash the gas and make it roll. Larson, the leader. Kurt Busch trying to go to the outside. Here comes Ryan Blaney. Blaney looking to go three wide up the middle. It's Kurt Busch to the lead on the backstretch.
Kyle Larson is out of gas. Kurt Busch goes to the lead. Ryan Blaney goes to second. They're three wide behind them. Up front, Kurt Busch leads the Daytona 500 to 3.
Kurt Busch all by himself at the front of the field, but will he make it back around? Has three car lengths over Kyle Larson and AJ Allmendinger. Off of turn four, it's Kurt Busch looking for the checker.
Kurt Busch leads the Daytona 500. He's never won before at Daytona, a former series champion. He will fix that today, winning the 59th edition of the Great American Race.
Good morning, race fans. 11:03 here on WGR Sports Radio 550, and welcome to another edition of WGR's Fast Track. I'm Dave Buchanan. Thanks for listening, as always. And that's how you heard it here last Sunday on WGR, as Kurt Busch drove to victory in the 59th running of the Daytona 500. The call from MRN with Dave Moody, Mike Bagley, Kyle Rickey, and Joe Moore as they came to the line on the final lap. As Kurt Busch passing Kyle Larson on that final lap, as Larson started to run out of gas, and Busch had just enough in the tank to pick up his first career Daytona 500 to end what was not maybe what I expected for the Daytona 500, but certainly lots to talk about from the big race last Sunday. That's what we'll do here this morning. Phone lines are open here right off the bat, 803-0551. 888-550-2550 to talk about the Daytona 500, what you saw in last week's race, what you liked, what you didn't like. Could they crash a few more times? Maybe. I don't know. But lots to talk about coming out of last week's race. So phone lines are open for you this morning. Also, we're on Twitter at FastTrack550. You can send us a tweet, and also on Facebook too, facebook.com/WGR Fast Track is our Facebook page. Coming up on today's show, coming up in about 10 minutes or so, we're going to talk to Michael Printup, the president of Watkins Glen International. We always seem to talk to him right after speed weeks, usually because Michael's down there and he's right in the middle of it. And, you know, he can gives us kind of a behind the scenes perspective on the event. But more importantly, big news concerning Watkins Glen this week. They announced their schedule for their cup race weekend in August, and big change, as a couple other tracks have already done this year. They have moved their qualifying for the cup series to the day of the race, which is a big change. We haven't had that in the cup series in a while, or ever. I'm not sure. I don't think cup cars have had qualifying and race on the same day. To my knowledge, at least, maybe back in the day they used to do it, but you know, a traditional cup weekend over the long as I've been paying attention, usually they qualify on a Friday or a Saturday, but they're going to do it on race day. So that was a big announcement this week for Watkins Glen. So we're going to talk to Michael Printup about that as well, too, how that impacts their promotion of the event and how they operate their weekend. Of course, they'll still have the Xfinity Series running on Saturday. They'll have the K&NE Series as well, too, that weekend as well. So there'll still be plenty of action throughout the weekend. Just, you won't see any Cup cars until Saturday when they have a practice session, and then you'll get qualifying on the day of the race about 12:30, and then the race this year at Watkins Glen, it's not starting until 3 o'clock Eastern, which is also a big change. Traditionally, that's like a, you know, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock start for the Glen, but a 3 o'clock start, and that also might create a few extra challenges for the folks at the Glen. So we'll talk to Michael Printup about that in less than 10 minutes. But the rest of this hour is wide open for you race fans at 803-0551, 888-550-2550. And last week's Daytona 500 and Kurt Busch getting the win, I thought it wasn't the race I expected. We were talking about all the wrecks in the truck and Xfinity races on Friday and Saturday, and I said, you know, a lot of that had to do with the lack of experience in both fields, and I thought we would not see the amount of wrecks we did in the Cup race in the 500, and that turned out not to be the case because we had, I think, five or six major incidents throughout the afternoon, especially late in the race. In that final stage alone, I think there was four of them. And it just turned out that these guys were hungry to get back on the track and really wanted to win the Daytona 500. Now, I will say right off the bat, all the wrecks were not a product of the new stage system. A lot of people, or some people said that, you know, that the stages, you know, made, you know, kind of screwed things up and caused a lot of these wrecks. I don't think that was the case, especially when you look at when the accidents happened. I think, again, four of them happened after the end, in the final stage. So, you know, that really didn't change things. You had one happen right before the end of one of the stages and one kind of in the middle of the first stage. So I don't think the stage racing had any impact on these wrecks being caused. And it was just maybe more of a case of guys being a little too aggressive or just making a mistake behind the wheel and you know, bump drafting the guy at the wrong place at the wrong time to create a lot of these wrecks. Or if, you know, in Kyle Busch's case, when he cut a tire and his incident that took out him and a couple of teammates and Dale Jr. as well, too. So I don't think that the new rules concerning the stages had anything to do with all the wrecks last week. That being said, we also did, though, see the 5-minute rule, you know, again, come into play. We talked about that last week. I thought, potentially with the way it played out, you know, would maybe NASCAR go back and look at it for maybe the restrictor plate tracks? Nothing out of NASCAR this week concerning that. And, the rule, again, a lot of people were upset by the 5-minute rule. I get it. I get why they do this. It saves teams money. It keeps them from having to bring extra equipment to the track to make repairs, to bring extra sheet metal, to bring those crash carts that they call them to make these repairs on these damaged cars. So that's good too. It keeps cars off the track that are heavily damaged. Even if they are repaired, they still can't go anywhere as fast as the cars that are mostly intact or completely intact. And that also creates a safety hazard, a competition hazard out on the racetrack. So I get the reasoning for, you know, this rule. And if you're spending more than 5 minutes to repair damages anyway, you're not going to have a car that is likely going to compete for a win, especially at a restricted plate track. That being said, though, race winner Kurt Busch, his car did have damage received in one of the incidents, and he got back out there before the conclusion of his before the 5 minutes ran out for him when he made damage repairs. So it shows that, you know, if you can get the damage repaired that quickly, you still can be in contention to win. But if you're spending more than 5 minutes needing to make repairs to your car, obviously, you've got bigger problems and you're not maybe going to win. And again, the chance to maybe move from 39th to 37th, that's kind of gone out the window too, with the fact that 36th through 40th now only pays 1 point apiece. And that takes some of the incentive for teams to get damaged cars back onto the track as well too. So it's again, I understand a lot of the people's frustration. There was a lot of people, especially on Twitter, that had complained about this 5-minute rule all weekend, especially during the 500, especially if their driver was involved. But, you know, Dale Jr. wasn't going to compete for the win. That car was tore up, and Jr. himself even said that, you know, he's almost glad he didn't have to go back out there because it was just so beat up. There would have been no point really in him running out there and just taking laps. You know, it's just better for him to get out of the car and be done for the day because it was pretty tore up for the radiator. The toe was knocked out, a couple of things I heard him say. So again, it's maybe they'll take a look at it, but it currently no indication out of NASCAR that there's any changes to that rule coming for Talladega later this spring or the July race at Daytona 4th of July weekend. Let's go to the phones. First caller of the day is Robert in Geneseo. Robert, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. I got a question about I listened to your lacrosse coverage yesterday.
Yes.
Boy, have they changed the rules in lacrosse in 50 years.
Yeah, it's an interesting sport. Thank you for listening. It was a tough loss yesterday for the Bandits.
I totally lost on them. I played with in the old Tuscarora Reservation in Niagara County.
Uh-huh.
I knew a lot of the guys that were playing lacrosse up there, and most at that time, they didn't have enough guys to scrimmage. We used to go out there and scrimmage with them.
Yeah, I mean the sport's growing in this area big time, and the Bandits have a lot to do with that. Did you have a racing point you wanted to make, Robert?
No, I just wanted to tell you about that, though.
Okay, well, thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. Yeah, it was a tough overtime loss for the Bandits yesterday, but they had a good win on Friday night and enjoyed being on both broadcasts this weekend with John Gertler. Just a real quick rundown, some of the top finishers, some of the interesting performances out of Sunday's Daytona 500. Again, Kurt Busch getting the win. Ryan Blaney, who we talked about briefly on Sunday's show, maybe he had an outside shot, and he was there in that final last dash to the finish, finishing second despite starting 36. And AJ Allmendinger had a good day for GTG Doherty Racing and Director of Operations Mark Kelso, of course. They finished third. Good run for them after they started deep in the field. Eric Almirola, Paul Menard, top five finishes for their respective teams that could use a boost to start off the year. Joey Logano, my pick to win the race, was there at the end towards the front, but just could not get anybody to go with him during that last stretch run in at the end of the stage three. You know, Logano desperately wanted to get somebody to team up with him and make a run on Larson or Elliott or Busch there at the end, but he could just not get a drafting partner to go with him at the front of the field. Blaney finally went with him, but by then it was too late and everybody was starting to run out of gas. But Logano had a shot, but unfortunately just did not have the running partners to go with him. Casey Kane finished seventh. Michael Waltrip in his final start, how about that, finishing eighth? He was one of the few guys that didn't get any damage on Sunday. I think 35 out of the 40 cars were involved in an incident at some point. And Waltrip was one of the few that avoided it, and he got eighth. Matt DiBenedetto, great run for them in ninth, and Trevor Bayne rounded up the top 10. One of the interesting things about the top 10 from the Daytona 500, it was 10 different teams represented in the top 10 finishers. That's a pretty interesting stat. Busch, of course, with Stuart Haas, Blaney with the Wood Brothers, Allmendinger with JTG, Almirola with Petty, Logano with Penske, Casey Kane with Hendrick, Michael Waltrip, I can't even remember the name of the team he drove for. DiBenedetto with Go Fast Racing and Trevor Bayne with Roush Fenway Racing. So 10 different teams for all the talk of all the different, the domination of the Gibbs cars, which, a lot of them got wrecked on Sunday, and the Hendricks and Stuart Haas's of the world. You had 10 different teams represented in the top 10. And then you go back, to 11th with Brendan Gaughan, and he drove for an independent team, Beard Racing. Good run for him in 11th. And then Larson for Ganassi, and then Truex was the highest finishing Gibbs car. So really, top 13, top 12, 13 were all different teams from the NASCAR garage finishing at the front of the field in Sunday's Daytona 500. With that, let's go to the AT&T hotline and bring in the president of Watkins Glen International. Welcome back to the program. Michael Printup joins us again. Michael, it's been a long offseason away from talking to you. How are you? Great to talk to you.
Doing awesome, Dave. Thanks for having me on this morning. I really appreciate that, as always.
First up, how was your speed week? I'm assuming you were down at Daytona last weekend.
I was. I was down there a lot. I made almost trips every single week, but it was awesome. I mean, we had some crummy weather earlier in the week. The Clash was had a little weather there too. But as the 500 weekend approached, the weather got better and better, and it was a good weekend. And it was it's always fun to kick it off, but wow, it comes fast.
Yeah, the off season is very short in this sport, as we know. Just real quick, from that standpoint, just working with your colleagues at the International Speedway Corporation at NASCAR, how much nervous anticipation was there behind the scenes? You had so much kind of coming this year. You had Monster Energy as the new Cup Series sponsor. All of these rule changes, Dale Jr. coming back, just all of this stuff that was coming to a head last weekend. How was it behind the scenes that everybody was just nervous that it was all going to go off just right and have a good start to the season?
Yeah, I don't, you know, honestly, behind the scenes, we were probably some of the commerce people associated, you know, from NASCAR media, because, you know, we obviously live and breathe it every day. You know, the rule changes were the rule changes, the sessions, you know, some people had some comments about that. I think what they're going to see, though, that's only one race. We'll see Atlanta today. I think it's going to be an awesome race.
Mm-hmm.
They've got great weather, too, as you know, so good to turn on the TV and give them a watch. But it really wasn't that bad. Monster's awesome. I mean, I think it's great for our sport to bring along a brand like that. Nothing against Sprint. I mean, Sprint was just beyond a wonderful sponsor to be with the sport for 14 years. But
sure.
Monster, the Sessions, Dale coming back. I mean, we had a lot of good news. And let's face it, you know, Kurt and the kid going against for the win up there. I'm sure you saw that last lap. Kurt brought his veteran status to the table and completely out-deked him with the fake move to the left and then went around his right side. So, yeah, I thought it was an awesome race, and I think a lot of people felt the same inside.
Well, of course, this week, big news concerning Watkins Glen International, Michael. You guys are the third track now to officially announce that the fact that you're going to have Cup Series qualifying on race day. It'll be on Sunday about 12:30 before the race starts at 3:00. Just tell us what went into this decision, how much, and just talk about how this came to be with planning the schedule for 2017.
Yeah, we all looked at it, and I'm sure there's going to be some more tracks that come out. I know us in Pocono and Martinsville.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably a few others in there that I've missed. You know, we're looking at trying to highlight our weekend stays the weekend. We'll still have, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We have K&N Friday, which is just awesome, as you know, is, you know, the leader up to their weekend Xfinity, obviously, on Saturday, then Cup on Sunday. What we really took a look at was how much more excitement can we provide on Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's make this an action-packed day and really take a look at that because, you know, there's a good chunk of fans, almost half the fans on Sunday that only buy Sunday tickets. So, you know, it's hard to take away a little content on Friday, but at the end of the day, we're going to provide more. We're still trying to get some content on Thursday. We obviously haven't made that announcement yet, but we want to have some racing on Thursday, not with those three series, but we're going to look at some other opportunities. And I think it's just going to action-pack the day for the fans. They have a little break in between. May come down, join us pre-race, have some of those kind of fun things, go back to display row. I really think what the fans will see is the series wears on this year. Come August, it'll be the typical Glen. It's you know, what do you come to the Glen for? There's all kinds of good things, but the party, the racing, the quality, friends, family, kids, it'll all be that all over again this year.
How much did the television partners, and for your race, of course, it'll be NBCSN and NBC, how much of an impact did they have on this decision?
Yeah, we were all at the table, not collectively. I mean, we work with, obviously, our group of 12 racetracks across the country. Work with Joey Chitwood, who is the COO of ISC.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can't have 13 voices at the table, of course.
Sure.
But we collectively got together with Joey, and we all took turns, and then we had individual conversations with Joey, you know, for each one of our tracks. And NASCAR and TV were on the other side. I'm going to tell you, we all had an equal stake in how to do it, what we thought was better, what we think would work. And I think, you know, for Watkins Glen, we thought this might be a really good time to show off, to be leaders in the pack, along with Martinsville and Pocono, to really take a hard look at this and see if there's an opportunity to grow some more business on Sunday.
Now, we'd known with the printing of the schedule for this year, you were going to have a 3 p.m. start. Was the day of qualifying, was that always supposed to be a part of it, or did that come after the your start time was posted for this year?
Yeah, since we did post time early, well, not early, it was probably, I think it was like a week before our race last year. So that came first. And then when we started look at programming the day, it's like, wait a minute, we've got a long day now. And people just started throwing stuff against the wall, and we wanted to see what would stick. And, you know, this is one of those things that the qualifying on day of, we thought might give it a whirl and really show the fans a high quality, not that it's not low quality before, but
right.
higher quality day of events.
Michael Printup joining us from Watkins Glen International. So you'll have the K&N East cars on Friday. You'll have the Xfinity Series race, of course, on Saturday with the Cup Series on Sunday. But there will be Cup cars will be on track. They'll have a practice session on Saturday as well, too, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you have Xfinity on Friday as well, practice.
Okay.
Yeah, you still have just an action-packed Saturday. And that was part of the other decision in what we're making here. We were really cramming an awful lot in on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
It was making it tough for the facility for one opportunity. You know, you always got to look at if you got to do some track repairs, and I don't mean the track itself because you know we paved that last year. But, you know, Armco repairs or anything
sure.
else or other safety concerns that might come up during any of those other races. So it really kind of lightened up a little bit of Saturday and made Saturday a little bit more relaxing for the drivers. Hopefully the fans won't see much of a difference because the day still starts early in the morning and goes till the completion of the Xfinity race.
Of course, the one other thing with the 3 p.m. start time on Sunday, Michael, of course, is that really closes your window in event of weather or, say, you know, we've seen some incidents at your facility in the past that have caused some, you know, Armco damage and you've had to make repairs, with the daylight we have in mid-August here in New York State, that really gives you a tight window to get that show in, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm swagging to hear Dave, but I think we get dark around 8:30, quarter to 9. I mean, it still leaves us 5 hours. And the good thing, you can take away the rain since we are being a road course.
Yeah, you do have the rain tires.
Race in the rain. So yep. Unlike some of the other tracks that have a later start, we could kind of check that box on the weather side. Because
mm-hmm.
All of us, including NASCAR, we have a little bit of us in us. And I say maybe 3 or 4%. Obviously, out of 100, we'd like to see the little cup guys go in the rain once in a while. So maybe the fans wouldn't, but, there's a bunch of us that might want to see that. But, you know, the window, if you have an accident, you know, we know that we've been under our repairs before. We get better and faster at that as we learn some tricks, and we've learned a lot of tricks in the last 5 years. So hopefully we can limit that window if there's any opportunity with the Armco.
Last question, Michael, about the Cup weekend. Of course, unfortunately, your partner at Cheez-It exited from the sport after this past season. That was your title sponsor. How is the search going for a possible replacement title sponsor for the Cup race?
Yeah, it's going well. We're down to two finalists right now. I would like to say that we'd have something inked up in the next 2 to 4 weeks. Cheez-It, you know, they were with us for 4 years. Just an awesome Kellogg's brand product. I can't say enough about them being around. You know, they had some changes internally and decided to redirect their marketing. They just announced this past week they went to Major League Baseball. But you're great partners. But, you know, the two that we have going down the pike, I feel really good about. They're great promotional partners potentially. So hopefully, like I said, we can wrap that up and get moving on for the rest of the year because we're ready to put year number two on this brand new asphalt. And, you know, success has always been connected with action, and we keep that ball moving. So we may make mistakes, but we won't quit. We'll keep on rolling. So.
Well, of course, that action gets started a lot sooner than August, Michael. You're about a month away from your opening weekend, and tell the race fans that listening, it gives them an opportunity to try their street car at Watkins Glen, right, for opening weekend coming up in about a month.
Yeah, it's the 7th and 8th. Actually, 6th, 7th, and 8th. We donate the track on Friday to a Green Grand Prix organization, so they bring schools. It's a STEM program. They bring from all over the Northeast, a little bit of the Midwest. And then Saturday and Sunday, bring your car, own vehicle on the racetrack. We're trying to line up some special guests. We haven't been able to finalize that yet, but we're getting close. But, you know, there's not too many fields, baseball, football, I say this every year, that you can go play on, just like Emerson Fittipaldi, Mario Andretti, Dale Earnhardt Sr., Jr., then you can't Watkins Glen and come drive the same course that they drove. And it's for charity, and we all get to have a little fun while we're doing it.
Yeah, that's coming up the weekend, Saturday, April 8th, Sunday, April 9th. Looking at your website, Michael, those are the days for opening weekend at Watkins Glen. You can get more information at theglen.com. And, of course, they'll have their big three events, the Salem 6 Hours, which is the last weekend in June, the NASCAR weekend, August 3rd and 6th. And don't forget, IndyCar is back for year number two. Michael, that was such a big hit last year, and you'll have the IndyCar stars back Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, we have the schedule is full. But yeah, we are so excited to have IndyCar back, and it's such a great weekend. But you're right, with the Joe Salen pulling up the front, which is awesome. Our good old Buffalo company that live in large, love Salen's products, able to get that moving, and then right into the Wine Festival, NASCAR, IndyCar, and the vintage after that. So we have a pretty busy summer as always, but got a little busy with IndyCar, but we're happy they're back. And you know, they broke the North American speed record last year, and maybe they'll do it again this year.
Very good. Again, more information at theglenn.com for tickets and a full schedule of their events coming up this year. Mike, always great to catch up. I'm sure we'll do it again soon. Thank you for the time this morning.
Dave, thank you very much. Have a great day.
All right. Michael Prince up from Watkins Glen International. Again, the big announcement this week that the Cup Series will qualify on Sunday of their NASCAR weekend at 12:30 with the race to come at 3 o'clock. And I just wanted to get Michael's perspective on it, the decision that went into everything, bringing that to fruition, and just what they had on tap for this year. We come back, wide open phones here for the rest of the hour. If you want to get in on the Daytona 500, something, what you thought about last week's race or what you're thinking about today's race at Atlanta, or are you a Watkins Glen fan? Do you buy tickets every year? Do you go camping at the Glen every year for NASCAR weekend? How does that, the schedule change, does that impact your decisions at all on when you go, if you go? You should still go, but if you go, or how long you're going to go for, I would love to know that. If you're a ticket buyer for Watkins Glen in that NASCAR race, how does this impact you? Are you more likely to go now on Sunday because you know you're going to see qualifying in the race? I would love to hear your thoughts on that, too. More when we get back here on Fast Track on WGR. 11:34 here on WGR Sports Radio 550, Dave Buchanan and WGR's Fast Track. Again, we got open phones for the rest of the hour here on the program for you to get your thoughts in on last week's Daytona 500, today's race at Atlanta, or the announcement for Watkins Glen that we just talked to Michael Printov about, as the Cup Series will qualify now on Sunday, race day, at about 12:30 before the race goes green around 3 o'clock. And especially if you are a ticket buyer for that event, interested to see what you think about that. Or does it make you more likely to be a ticket buyer? Maybe you've never gone, and you're even more interested in going now because of the extra content, I guess you could say, they have for you on Sunday with qualifying and the race itself at Watkins Glen International that first week of August. Real quick, let's take a look at the starting lineup for today's race at Atlanta, the Quick Trip 500, and Kevin Harvick on the pole. No, not a big surprise. Always strong on the mile and a half tracks. Of course, week two out for the Stuart Haas organization in the Ford. They've already got one win under their belt last week, thanks to Kurt Busch, and now Kevin Harvick on the pole for today's race. Ryan Newman will share the front row for him. Good qualifying performance for the RCR team. Row two, Kyle Busch, who's already got a win this weekend at Atlanta. He picked up the win in the Xfinity race yesterday. Actually, Kyle did triple duty this weekend. He ran both the Xfinity and truck races yesterday, and will start third today in the Cup race alongside Ricky Stenhouse in row two. Brad Keselowski, Joey Logano, Al Penske, row three, and it's an all Ganassi row four. It's almost like an IndyCar race. Jamie McMurray and Kyle Larson in row four for the two Ganassi cars. Then you've got Martin Truex and Denny Hamlin rounding out the top 10 starters. Chase Elliott, Dale Jr. roll off from row six. Your Daytona 500 champ, Kurt Busch, starts 13th today. Other notable names in the field: Matt Kenseth, 16th. Jimmy Johnson, 18th. Daniel Suarez, his second career Cup Series start. He'll start 21st. Danica Patrick starts 24th today. Casey Kane, former winner at Atlanta. He'll start 29th today. And only 39 cars in the field. They did not get 40, so nobody had to go home during qualifying. But that's not a good sign, I guess, to say that the didn't get a full field of cars in race two. It's not the end of the world, but it you would like to see a full field. Always good to see a lot of cars show up for a Cup Series event, and not the case at Atlanta. And it'll be interesting to see how those numbers turn out when the series heads out west for the next three races starting next weekend at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Obviously, the big talk of today's race at Atlanta will be tires, as the racing surface at the Atlanta Motor Speedway is very worn out. In fact, it's so worn out, they're going to repave it after today's race, much to the chagrin of most of the drivers in the Cup Series garage. Also, of course, the lower downforce, as NASCAR continues to take away some of the downforce in these cars. They started last year, and now and starting this year, also even more downforce taken out. Try and get these cars almost a little more similar to the Xfinity Series in terms of downforce, at least. So you combine that with a worn-out racetrack, and that makes for a driver's race where these guys are going to be all over the steering wheels today for 500 miles, turning left and maybe turning right a few times just to keep the car pointed straight, especially in the corners, which usually makes for a more interesting race, although it is a mile-and-a-half facility, in racing on these style of racetracks don't always generate the most exciting competition, and it allows for drivers to get stretched out a little bit more. We'll see if the stage racing concept, see how much that affects it, whereas, you know, these guys potentially run a little bit harder in the first two stages, also keeps throw in some extra cautions, and that also keeps the field from getting strung out, as it were. Combine that with the lower downforce and the fact that the tires are going to wear out a lot quicker today. Hopefully make for a little bit more improved product here at the mile and a half track at the Atlanta Motor Speedway. But, you know, look for guys like Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Kyle Larson, you know, the couple of names to keep an eye on today. Two drivers that definitely love a type of racetrack like this. Larson traditionally on a track like this, he'll be right up against the wall on the outside. That's his preferred line, but you saw a lot of guys in the Xfinity Series race run well right along the bottom, especially Kevin Harvick, and he starts on the pole today. So hopefully you see multiple lines and multiple grooves develop throughout the afternoon, and it makes for hopefully an exciting race today at the Atlanta Motor Speedway. Again, Harvick on the pole, Newman alongside. So a green flag just after 2:30 this afternoon. Going back, kind of finishing up a couple of thoughts from Daytona from last week, and the thing after all the wrecks that were in the race on Sunday, the fact that the race came down to a long green flag run was the most exciting part of it for me was that we got a long green flag run to kind of run out the race. The last caution was about 1:53 was the last caution of the race on Sunday. So you had the final 47 laps under green flag, and it made for a long run to the finish, and it turned into be a fuel run, which was kind of surprising. We thought with the stages and everything that fuel mileage races would be maybe not a thing of the past, but not happen as often, and you don't often see fuel mileage races at Daytona, but that's what it turned into, and that was why Chase Elliott, you know, his chances of winning were a dash there at the end. Also, same for Kyle Larson. What two great storylines those would have been had they had won. Elliott hit his first win at a track where his father had so much success, and you know that he's such a bright up and coming star in the sport. And then Larson too to get a big win. Got a huge grassroots support from the fan base with his background in sprint car racing and everything. Those would have been great stories, but unfortunately fuel mileage took them out of the equation, allowed Kurt Busch had just enough at the end to go to the lead. But I'm glad it got to play out, because so often it seems like in the past that you're setting up for a long green flag run at the finish, and we always get some kind of debris caution at the end to kind of bunch things up. Whether those are genuine or not remains to be seen. Sometimes they seem suspicious when they do happen, but as long as I can see proof on my television that there is a genuine debris on the racetrack or something wrong, I will accept it. But sometimes there's those phantom debris cautions at the end of a race when things are playing out like that to kind of spoil things for him. But we didn't get that last Sunday. They let it play out, which was great to see, and you know, it wasn't the finish maybe we'd expected with what we saw last year with a close finish between Denny Hamlin and Martin Truex, where everybody was kind of bunched up, but it turned into just kind of an eight car freight train at the end, and nobody really wanting to go until the last minute to make that run on the leader, whoever it was at the time. You know, we saw Joey Logano. It seemed like Logano was dying to just get someone to go with him to try and take a run at the front. Unfortunately, time ran out for him. But then the fuel mileage came into play. Guys started running out, and that's what ramped up the excitement at the end and set up another last lap pass, which is like at least the second year in a row that we've had now a last lap pass in the Daytona 500, and allowed Kurt Busch to get the win. What a moment. I think this kind of completes Kurt's career. You know, he was a champion way back in 2004. I know doesn't seem like that long ago, but, you know, it's been a while since he won his championship, but he's got, you know, over 20 wins in his Cup Series career, but he has had his off the track moments. You know, the drunk driving arrest, the alleged drunk driving arrest, in a couple of years after the championship at the end of his days with Roush Racing. The incident a couple years ago, or last year, was it, with his then-girlfriend at the time, and the allegations of domestic abuse, which, you know, he was never found guilty of and was exonerated for, but that kept him out of Speed Weeks, you know, because of it, because he was suspended. So all the off-track stuff that's kind of been a blotch on his NASCAR record, that for all of his accomplishments, he's always had these off-track issues. I mean, he was almost completely out of the sport a few years ago, you know, just driving almost one-off deals just to stay in the sport on a weekly basis. You know, the whole incident at Penske when he blew up on the reporter and he got let go from Penske Racing, that could have been the end of his career. And luckily, he was able to hang on, luckily for him, and caught on with this ride at Stewart Haas Racing, and is once again become not prominent. What's the word I'm looking for? Relevant to the sport. That's what I'm looking for. You know, it's huge redemption for him that despite all the rough patches he's had over the last few years, that he's able to add to his resume and maybe cement himself as a great driver in the sport. And you know, maybe cinch up his spot in the Hall of Fame someday. Now you've got a Cup Series championship and a Daytona 500 title to your resume. That almost will make it a lock for him to maybe make the Hall of Fame someday once he retires. But good redemption story for him. Also, his crew chief Tony Gibson, his reaction after winning, how great was that? And after everything he's been through with his health over the last couple of years, that made it even more fun too to see him, his reaction. And Tony Stewart also, as a car owner, winning the Daytona 500, something he missed as a driver. He didn't get a chance to do, but his first Daytona 500 is strictly a car owner in the Cup Series, gets a Daytona 500 win as well too. So it was a feel-good story all around for the Stewart Haas Racing 41. I think the only thing that upset me at the end of the race was the Fox broadcast, and you heard Mike Joy say that we're going commercial free for the rest of the race, whatever it was, like 45 laps to go. And what do? They go to a commercial. I don't get that. I think there was, at least the way Mike was putting out on Twitter this week, there was some confusion that they had to take a local break or something, so they can't even do the split screen for the local breaks. But I was fuming. If there's one thing I get more riled up about watching NASCAR races, if you follow me on Twitter, it is the commercials, especially when there are a lot of commercials, and we were supposedly going to get fewer green flag commercials because of the stages and everything. I don't know. I didn't notice a difference. We still got, you know, that usual first commercial break at about lap 10, and it just seemed to go on from there. But the most irritating thing was the fact that Mike Joy said no commercials, and then there was a commercial. And then there was actually two more commercial breaks on top of it, but those were the split screen style of breaks where you still have the action in the little box on the side of the screen. But to say that you're going to have no commercials and then have three breaks, one of those breaks being full screen interruption, was rather irritating. And hopefully if they do it again today with the Atlanta broadcast, they figure things out and know not to say no commercials and still have commercials. Had it been split screen commercials, I wouldn't have been as upset. I get that. You can kind of say no. You can say we're going to go uninterrupted the rest of the way and do split screen. But if you're going to say no commercials and then have a full screen break, that was did not like that. But again, I think there might have been some miscommunication with the production truck and the announcer's booth. At least that's how Mike Joy was kind of painting it on Twitter this week, responding to some of the fan comments about that. And who doesn't love responding to NASCAR Twitter? Because they're all such rational, happy people, right? All right, we get back. Final segment here on the program. We'll take a look at our Fast Track Fantasy League recap after race one. We had quite a dominating performance from one of our contestants. It wasn't me, unfortunately, but we'll take a look at that and a few final thoughts too for today's Race Atlanta, and still time for your phone calls. We can squeeze those in as well to 803-0551, 888-552-550 when we wrap up Fast Track here on WGR. Hey, race fans, it's Dave Buchanan for my friends at Batavia Downs. Batavia Downs Gaming is the area's premier entertainment destination with newly renovated entrance, gaming floor, and, of course, that new hotel they have as well, too. And at Batavia Downs, March is Leprechaun Loot Month at Batavia Downs Gaming and Hotel. Nightly drawings for $250 cash with guaranteed payouts of $5,000 or more on Saturdays. Car drawings from Castellone Chrysler Dodge Jeep of Batavia on Saturday, March 25th. And win a cruise and see the Zac Brown Tribute Band on March 31st. first. See their website or Facebook for more details. Batavia Downs Gaming, a great place to go and watch sporting events, too. You can go to 34 Rush, Thurman Thomas' sports bar right inside Batavia Downs. They've got tons of HD TVs. They've got the big 15-foot projection screen for big events. So you can go there and watch the race today. There's a hockey game later today you can watch. Of course, college basketball heating up as well, too. There'll be a lot of big basketball games coming up to watch throughout the month of March. So be sure to head to 34 Rush and check that out as well, too. And discover why Batavia Downs Gaming is the area's premier entertainment destination with over 800 of the hottest and in-demand video gaming machines. Lots of great new titles with new ones regularly added. And make it a night to remember by visiting one of their great restaurants, staying the night at the hotel, or wagering on live harness races. All that at Batavia Downs Gaming. And tell them you heard about them right here at Fast Track.
Hi, this is Dylan Hart Jr., driver of the Nationwide Exalta Chevrolet. You're listening to WGR Sports Radio 550.
Thanks, Junior. 11:53 here on WGR Sports Radio 550. Coming up today on WGR, it's Sabres game day. Mid-late afternoon, early evening game as they're in Pittsburgh to take on the Penguins. Face-off just after 5 o'clock this afternoon. So pregame with my buddy Brian Koziel coming up at 4 o'clock today here on WGR. Our WGR Fast Track Fantasy League did not go well for me last week. I had Joey Logano, of course. He was my pick to win the race. Didn't win, but finished 6th. So I got me decent points, but I had bad day out of Junior, only 5 points. Bad day for Kyle Busch. Only 4 points. Brett Keselowski, only 15 points. Martin Truex, despite being involved in that crash with Junior and Kyle Busch, came back, finished the race 13th. And because he started so deep in the field, he gained 22 positions from his starting spot. He actually gained the most points from me last week, 51. Unfortunately, it was only a total of 120 points, so that puts me mid-pack. I finished 22nd overall in our Fast Track Fantasy League. But the Fantasy Player of the Week was Gary W. He blew everybody's doors off with 273 points. He was about 70 points better than anybody else. And he actually is ranked 26th overall on Fox Sports for everybody that plays the game. And he had a real, what turned out to be a solid lineup. He took Blaney, who finished 2nd, and also gained 34 spots from his starting position. Almendinger, same thing, finished 3rd, gained 35 spots. So we got 74 points from each of Blaney and Almendinger. That's more points than I scored total. Martin Truex, he also had Truex, so he also gained a lot from Truex. And he gained a lot of Casey Kane, who finished 7th and gained 19 spots. His only weak spot on his lineup was Kevin Harvick, who lost 17 positions, finished 22nd, so it only got him 20 points. But a total of 273 points, and it's given him a big head start here on our Fast Track Fantasy League because he is up by almost 70 points on his next closest competitor, Nick W., who had 205 points, and then our next highest team had 182. So amazing how things can play out, but when a lot of the pre-race favorites wreck out, that does kind of happen, and usually it's the guy that maybe goes a little off the wall with his picks that winds up doing best. So whether he is either an evil fantasy NASCAR genius and somehow knew that by starting Blaney and Almendinger, for them starting so deep in the field, he knew they'd be there at the finish, or he just got really lucky. I don't know. Gary, if you can tweet me or send me an email, let me know what your strategy was. I'm 22nd, and Paul Hamilton is 32nd, so I beat Paul. That's all that matters. Paul is 32nd. We wound up getting a lot of entries late during the show last week. We gained like over 12, 15 entries. We actually have 64 people signed up for the league, so that's real exciting. So we'll keep playing on foxsports.com. And, oh, I was going to say who I had picked today for my fantasy pick, so now I need to open that window back up. I have Daniel Suarez. He crashed out, obviously, last week. But he starts deep in the field, so 21st, so I'm looking for upside there that he has a good day and gains me some spots. Also, Jimmy Johnson starting 18th, but I think, you know, he could be there at the end, so that'll also get you some extra points. But going with some guys starting towards the front, too, Kyle Busch, who's already got a win this weekend. Chase Elliott always did well last year in his first Atlanta start. He starts 11th today, and I'm going with Brad Keselowski, who always seems to do well on mile-and-a-half tracks as well, too. So he starts 5th, so hopefully rebound here with the Fast Track fantasy team, and hopefully play along too. Also, during the race today, of course, feel free to send us tweets at FastTrack550 if you're watching, and follow along. We can continue our discussion on social media. Next weekend is Las Vegas. We'll have the race next Sunday here on WGR. We don't today. I apologize due to the Sabres game this afternoon, but you can always listen on the PRN app. They have an app and a website you can stream the race on if you want to listen to it. GoPRN.com is their website. But we will have the Vegas race next weekend here on the station. And that means I think we may be dialing up our buddy Doug Rice for next week's show. We'll try and get in touch with Doug or somebody from PRN to talk to on next week's program. That'll do it. I'll talk to you next Sunday. Thanks for listening to Fast Track here on WGR Sports Radio 550.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.